Mishpatim Shekalim. Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Mishpatim, Shabbat Parshat Shekalim, Mevorachim Chodesh Adar, the month of Adar, and a whole bunch of other things which we probably won't get to. But this Shabbat, as I just mentioned, is Parshat Mishpatim. Mishpatim in a 12-month year is usually, but not always, usually Parshat Shekalim, the first of the four special Parshiot, special Shabbatot. I will discuss those in a couple of minutes. For now, let me say, recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, Kaf Zayin Shavat, the 27th day of the month of Shavat, 5770, on the secular calendar, February 11th. Which, by the way, happens to be the day that George Washington was born. If you'll ask, so how come his birthday used to be celebrated on the 22nd of February? I'll tell you. Because now it isn't even celebrated then, it's combined with President's Day, which combined Lincoln's birthday with Washington's birthday, put it on a Monday always. But once upon a time, for a long time, we celebrated, whatever that means, and whatever celebrated means with George Washington, his birthday was February 22nd. He actually was born on February 11th, Old Calendar. Old calendar means the Julian calendar, which in the United Kingdom, or whatever they called it in those days, including the 13 colonies in those days, we're talking about 1732, when Washington was born. 1.732 is the three-digit approximation to the square root of 3. I don't know if that was meant to remember George Washington's birth year or vice versa, but that's what stuck in my head. The colonies and the whole British Empire were still on the Julian calendar. In September or October, maybe September, of 1752, if my memory serves me correctly, there was a gross adjustment to the calendar to compensate for a deviation in the beginning of spring. The reason I'm saying this now is our calendar, the Jewish calendar, is very much into coordinating the calendar with the seasons so that Pesach is always in the springtime and Sukkot is mentioned as being in the fall time. The others just fall into place with Pesach. And the secular calendar, the solar calendar, had a different kind of problem, but one reminds me of the other. So they made a gross adjustment by removing 11 days from the calendar. If I'm not mistaken, the day after September 3rd was September 15th rather than the 4th. 11 days out of the calendar, new calendar, Washington's birthday became February 22nd. As I said, I mention all of this because we in the Jewish calendar have adjustments that have to be made, except we can't lose track over a long period of time and have a gross adjustment, but we do have minor adjustments from year to year of a different nature. In any event, that's the date, February 11th, more significant to us, 27 Shvat, which means the month of Shvat is running down, and this Shabbat, as I mentioned, is not only Rosh Chodesh benching for Adar, but the first of the special Parshiot. We'll be there in a moment. First, Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed. Shir ha-ma'alot mi-ma'amakim karaticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli, tihiena aznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmorya Adonai mi ya'amod, ki imcha haslicha l'ma'an tivare. Ki viti Adonai kiveta nafshi, v'lidvaro hocholti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim l'boker, shomerim l'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut, v'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotziyem mitzara l'yirvacha u'miafela l'ora u'mishibud l'geula hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. Okay, let's look at the calendar and see what's coming up. First of all, the opening tune before the usual opener of Torah Tidbits Audio was Mishenichnas Adar Marbim B'Simcha. When the month of Adar enters, we increase in joy. This is not yet, because today, as I mentioned, is only the 27th of Shvat, but since this Shabbat, in whose honor the show is Erev Rosh Chodesh, which of course means that Sunday is still the 30th of Shvat, and it's not till Sunday night, Monday, that we start Adar. Nevertheless, we announce that Rosh Chodesh Adar will be Machar B'Yom Rishon U'V'Yom Sheni. Rosh Chodesh on Shabbat, we will say, will be tomorrow, Sunday, and Monday. And the mood is already there, especially in Israel. You walk around in all the toy stores and many, many other shops, get on the bandwagon, and there are costumes and all kind of fixings for dressing up on Purim. They've been out already for a couple of weeks, but it intensifies as Adar approaches. In any event, there is a school of thought that says the concept of Adar being a joyous month is not just because of the Purim holiday that is in that month, but it's the fact that the month and the holiday of Purim is linked to the month of Nisan and Pesach, and Purim and Pesach represent redemption, salvation, different types, and together they sew up the cycle of the year, which starts in Nisan and ends with Adar. And this is a very, very nice joining together of the two ends of what becomes the circle of the year, if you look at it that way. It's a very, very nice combination. And Rashi says in one place in the Gemara that the reason when Adar enters we increase in joy is because of Adar and because of the Nisan that follows it. Now, Pesach in Nisan is the hub from which all the calendar radiates. Everything is Zecher Liyitziat Mitzrayim, commemorative of the Exodus. Many mitzvot are commemorative of the Exodus. It is a very crucial central focal point of Jewish life and specifically for now the Jewish calendar. In introduction of the coming Pesach, our sages declared four special Shabbatot, the first being Rosh Chodesh Adar, if that happens to be a Shabbat, and if not, the Shabbat immediately previous to it. This Shabbat is such a Shabbat, shall be Parshat Shekalim. Shekalim, silver half shekels, were collected from each male Jew, required, women voluntary, above the age of 20 in the case of men, and they were used, the fund was used for many purposes, sometimes for a census, but mostly to form a communal fund from which the daily sacrifices and the wine of libation and the flour and the oil mixtures for the meal offerings and many, many other communal needs of the temple were taken from that fund, where the Torah emphasizes He'oshir lo yarbev hadal lo yamit mimachatzit ha-shekel, that rich people didn't give more and poor people were not allowed to give less. This was a very strong equalizer and unifier. The fact that you have half shekel means that you're only partial. Even when there was a denomination of currency that was equal to a half shekel, let's just say for argument's sake the dinar, although I don't think that's accurate. But let's say there was such a coin, call it the shmerd, just not to mix it up with anything real. The shmerd, at a certain period in Jewish history, was a silver coin equal to the value of a half shekel. Came the collection of the half shekels, a Jew could not give a shmerd. He had to bring a shmerd to the money changer and receive a half shekel and give that. Two Jews could not together get together with a whole shekel coin. They had to go to the money changer, break it into two half shekel coins, and each one gave that. There's a message in a half. A half means partial. It means you have a partner to make something whole. And in this case, the partner is the entire Jewish nation. There is another angle to Shekalim. Before that, the Mishnah in Masechet Shekalim tells us that on the first day of Adar, announcements were made throughout the Jewish communities in the land of Israel to get your pennies together and change them into a half shekel silver coin for the purpose of the annual collection, which would begin to take place 2 weeks hence. That's why on Rosh Chodesh Adar, or the Shabbat immediately before, we announce the mitzvah of Shekalim, which doesn't apply in our time, although we have commemoratives of it, this being one of them. We commemorate it by reading the portion in the Torah, in a second Sefer Torah, as the maftir for this special Shabbat. About Shekalim, we have the giving of Zecher Lemachatzit HaShekel, commemorative of the silver half shekel. We give, in Israel, three half shekel coins. Some people give the monetary value in modern new Shekalim of the original silver half shekel. In other countries, they use a half denomination coin if they have such a thing. Three of them is the custom, but that's later in the month. We'll talk about it coming up to Purim. As far as the reading of Parshat Shekalim this Shabbat, it is to correspond to and commemorate the announcement of the Shekalim at the beginning of the Adar, because the fiscal year of the Beit HaMikdash was from Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And this way the funds would be collected, and the new funds would be available for the various needs of the temple come the first of Nisan. As I started to say before, there is another angle to Shekalim which is very significant, and that is that the mitzvah of Shekalim that we have, which is symbolic of our unity, is meant as an antidote, a vaccine against the shkalim of Haman and the Hamans of the world. In the story of Megillat Esther, we are told that Haman came to the king Ahasuerus and requested permission to destroy the Jewish nation, to kill every man, woman, and child. His argument before Ahasuerus, who as a practical king was concerned about resistance and about perhaps a rebellion, an uprising, if such a plot would to be hatched, was answered. His worries were answered by Haman, who said to him, Yeshno am echad mifuzar umiforad bein ha'amim b'chol malchut, b'chol medinot malchutecha. There is a nation that is fractionalized and separated and scattered among all of your provinces. You do not have to worry that they will unify to resist this plot or to fight against you. Our shkalim say to Haman and the Hamans of the world, you lie. We have a sense of unity. We don't always act upon it to our detriment, but it exists in the core of Jewish life and law, that there is a unity, and one of the representatives of this is the collection of the half shekels, the unifying factor. And therefore, as we are about to enter the month of Adar, where the focus of this month is Purim, right in the middle of the month, 14th of the month around the world, 15th of the month in Jerusalem, 14th and 15th in a few cities in Israel, and different kind of things. Hopefully we'll have time to talk about that in a week or two also. But our shkalim come first, and that sets the tone to resist the threat to people, from people who perceive us and portray us as not caring about each other. So that's Parshat Shkalim. The week before Purim, which in this year's case is a week, 2 weeks from this Shabbat, that Shabbat is called Parshat Zachor, a day to remember the mitzvah, to remember Amalek, the predecessor, the antecedent of Haman, the ancestor of Haman. And these are not just for Purim, but they're also to create, especially the Shkalim, which I just mentioned before, is for getting the monies ready for Nisan and the Korban Pesach and the gathering of the people, Aliyah LeRegel, during that month of Nisan. The Shabbat after Purim, sometimes with a skip of a Shabbat, sometimes not, is Parshat Parah, which speaks about the purification process of someone who became ritually defiled to a dead body. And in preparation to participate in the Passover sacrifice, one had to cleanse and purify himself and be purified. So that's read on that Shabbat, followed by Parshat HaChodesh on or right before Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And that mentions the whole Jewish calendar, and it mentions specifically the celebration of Pesach and the Passover sacrifice and the blend of the story of that first Passover Eve with the rules for Pesach night in perpetuity. So it's a series of four Shabbatot which span 5 weeks and sometimes 6 weeks, and that leads us towards Purim on the way to Pesach. And the Shabbat before Pesach is not one of these four specials, but has its own special nature. It's called Shabbat HaGadol, and Amir Tzashem will have time to talk about that. Here is the other well-known melody for Mishanichnas Adar. Hopefully it will get your toe tapping and your mind focused towards the coming month, and most importantly, will put a smile on your face and in your heart and in your soul, because as Adar is about to enter, we should make a concerted effort to see the happy side of life and to know that even though we have problems, there is not only a silver lining, but a lot of silver to Jewish life. Right back. You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio for Parshat Mishpatim, even though we haven't spoken about it yet, and Parshat Shkalim, which we have spoken about. And the short musical clip that introduced this second half is from LaYehudim Hayata Ora V'Simcha V'Sason V'Yikar, a pasuk from Megillat Esther, which we borrow and quote in Havdalah every Motzoi Shabbat, and was also reflected in the Achinu Kol Beit Yisrael, which we said after Psalm 130, namely speaking about light as opposed to dark, and joy as opposed to sadness. And these are the hopeful feelings that we have as the month of Adar comes, especially from the fact that the month of Adar looked very, very gloomy, and v'nahafochu, it turned into a very festive month. That's the key. But let's get to Mishpatim. Just a word about the connection. There is no official connection between Parshat HaShavua and the four Parshiot. The parshiot that go along with the four portions, which remember span five or sometimes six Shabbatot for a Shana Pshuta, a regular year that has only one Adar, 12 months, is a different set from the one that goes along with the same Arba Parshiot during a Shana Mu'uberet, a 13-month year, when we have two Adars. To be specific, the Parshiot around the Arba Parshiot this year, Mishpatim is with Shkalim, Teruma next week is a break called a Hafsaka, the following week is Titzava, which is Zohar, then Kitisa, which is Pura, and Vayakel Pekude, which is HaChodesh. The maximum range of these in any given year runs from Mishpatim to Pekude, to Vayakel Pekude. No, here's Vayikra. It's possible that Vayikra could be HaChodesh in a regular year. It doesn't matter. The range for Shana Me'uberet, the leap year, is from Vayakel to Tazria. So Vayakel, by the way, is the only sedra that is always involved in the Arba Parshiot. That's just a trivia piece of information. Let's get into Mishpatim. Mishpatim, very significant in and of itself. It contains 53 mitzvot out of a total of 613 in the Torah. There are only three other sederas with more. Ki Teitse with 74, Emor with 63, and Re'e with 55, followed by number 4, Mishpatim, with 53, followed close by Kedoshim with 51. Those are the five sedras with 50 or more mitzvot each. If you want to add to the top mitzvah sedras one more, it would be Shofetim, which has 41. Below that, you go down to 28. So it sort of blocks off those six. That contains a lion's share of the Torah's mitzvot. So as such, it's significant, but its placement is very significant. In last week's Torah reading of Yitro, we read of the account of Matan Torah, Ma'amad Har Sinai, revelation at Sinai, the receiving of the Torah, the Ten Commandments, the mountain, smoking, lightning, thunder, increasing sound of the shofar, the mountain trembling, the people trembling, a very awe-inspiring description of a very special day in the history of the Jewish nation. At the end of this week's reading of Mishpatim, the story continues. There's a little bit of review and a continuation of the story, and therefore the entire Torah's account of revelation at Sinai began last week in Parshat Yitro, ends at the end of Mishpatim, and in between you have very down-to-earth, everyday Jewish law, which makes a profound statement. Do not think that Judaism means only a trembling Mount Sinai with a multitude hearing the voice of God booming, I am the Lord your God who took you out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. There shall not be any other gods before me, etc. It's that, but you know what else it is? Little everyday tiny things. I'm going into the store. I can't take my bicycle into the store. Can you do me a favor? Stand outside the store. I'll be back in 10 minutes and keep an eye on my bicycle. I come back out of the store. The bicycle is gone. I said, where's my bicycle? He says, three big guys came and they pushed me aside and they stole your bicycle. All right, we have a situation here. If the guy is telling the truth, that three guys came, pushed him aside, and stole the bicycle, he does not have to compensate me for the loss of my bicycle. He was, for me, a shomer chinam, a guardian of my property without being compensated for it, and theft makes him exempt from paying me for it, unless he was negligent. If he actually went in to the next door video shop to look at the latest DVDs and came out and the bicycle was gone, Then he was negligent, and he is responsible for the loss of my bicycle, and he has to pay me for it. How do we know? So the Torah provides for a din Torah. I bring him before a Beit Din of three, and the Beit Din questions me and questions him. Were there any witnesses to the theft of the bicycle? No. Your claim this, his claim that. The court, will have the person take an oath that he was not negligent in his watching of my bicycle, and he is exempt from paying. Does this sound like a smoking Har Sinai and thunder and lightning, which the people not only heard the one and saw the other, but they heard and saw both, and the sound of the shofar ever increasing, and a death penalty for anyone who touched the mountain while God's presence was there, and hearing God's voice directly? How does that compare with, where's my bicycle? Or, I lent you a pen, and you returned it, and it was broken. Or, I lent you a camera to take on vacation, and now the battery doesn't work anymore. All of these things are mundane, everyday, down-to-earth, no less part of the Torah. That, I believe, is a significant message of Parshat Mishpatim, especially that the story of Matan Torah was split between the reading in last week and the reading at the end of Mishpatim. In fact, if you ask the average Jew who knows Torah a little bit, or even a lot, for the special, very special quote of the people of Israel in the process of accepting the Torah, they will answer, Na'aseh v'nishma. We will do, and then we will understand. And that was a very, very special response to the offer of Torah. Now ask that same person, in what Torah portion did the Jews respond in one voice, unanimously proclaiming everything that God commands us, Na'aseh v'nishma? I bet most, if not all, the people that you ask will say Parshat Yitro, because that's where the events of Sinai Revelation are recorded. The answer is, they never said that in Parshat Yitro. They got close. Twice they said, Na'aseh, we will do. And only in the end of Parshat Mishpatim do we have the famous formula for which we have been praised by God, Na'aseh v'nishma. It's at the end of Parshat Mishpatim. It's a reminder and a pivotal message that Judaism is involved with every mundane act of a person. I was talking to someone yesterday about not even a requirement of law, but a time-honored custom. And that is that when a Jew puts on his shoes, he is supposed to put on his right shoe first, and then his left. And then if it has laces, he ties his left, and then ties his right. That, when you tell the uninitiated individual, will say, what are you talking about? What possible difference could it make which shoe you put on first? If you want to tell me that there is something special to the right versus the left, and there is, the right represents God's Midat HaRachamim, his mode of mercy, and the left represents his strength and his strict judgment, and therefore, ritualistically, we favor the right as if we want to remind God, so to speak, to treat us with his merciful attribute, Midat HaRachamim, fine. So when I carry a Torah from the ark to the reading table, I put the Torah on my right shoulder. When I take the four species on Sukkot, I hold the Lulav Hadassim and Aravot combination in my right hand, and the single species, versus the first three, in my left hand. When I wash, ritually, Netilat Yadayim, I wash my right hand first, and then my left, making a statement repeatedly in various and different practices of the priority to the right over the left, and the message that it carries as to how God judges his people. You want to tell me that it applies to shoes? The answer is, yes, it does. And that, to me, is the unique feature of Judaism, that it's not only how you wash your hands ritualistically, but it's how you put on your shoes. It's which hand do you put in to which sleeve first. Is it a sin to put your left shoe on first? No. But it makes a statement, a double statement. Number one, it's a mundane example of right versus left. But two, it makes the statement that there is this message even in the mundane. That, I believe, is an overriding lesson of Parshat Mishpatim. Basic, down-to-earth, civil issues. My dog went into your backyard and dug up your rose bushes. While he was doing that, he got scratched by the thorns, and I had to take him to the vet to treat the scratches. I have a bill for my vet. You have a bill for replacement of your rose bush. Who is responsible to pay? Down to earth, everyday business, relationship between neighbors, between friends, between strangers, common everyday things. We are not standing at a smoking, fiery Har Sinai every day, but we are, in a different sense, at Mount Sinai every single day of our lives, throughout the day, receiving the Torah and the message of the Torah, and much of that deals with everyday, mundane life. There is a very important verse. I really shouldn't say that because there are 5,846 verses in the Torah, and they're all important. But this one is very important because it answers an objection and a comment that a lot of people make. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, this is Shemot chapter 24, verse 12. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, God says to Moshe, Ale Elai Hahora, ascend to me up the mountain, Vehye Shem, and be there. According to our sources, this happened right after we heard the Aseret HaDibrot, and that day of revelation at Sinai was going to now continue for Moshe Rabbeinu. Ve'etna lecha et luchot ha'even, and I will give you the tablets of stone, ve'hatorah, and the Torah, the teachings, ve'hamitzvot, the commandments, asher katavti lehorotam, that I have written in order to instruct the people. Anyone who thinks that all we got from Sinai from God is the Ten Commandments, Charlton Heston will have to forgive me, is totally, completely mistaken, because there was an immediate extension of the experience at Sinai, but a little different from the way the first experience was, which was our doing. We heard God's voice directly. All of the Torah might have been transmitted like that, until we said to Moshe, our leader, we do not want to hear God's voice anymore. We're convinced that we have heard his voice, and we're afraid we will die if we continue hearing it. You tell us what God wants of us, and we will do it. God says, you know what? I'll go along with that, provided that the people keep their side of the deal and treat the teachings of Moshe Rabbeinu in the Torah and the teachings of all the prophets, true prophets of God, as the word of God, which it is. And then I will go along with not directly communicating and having them hear my voice. A very important deal. So God says to Moshe, all the rest of the people could go home. During that period of time, God taught Moshe all of Torah, all of mitzvah, dictated to him, or indicated to him, what would be contained in the Torah, which he, Moshe, would be writing down at the end of the sojourn in the wilderness. The point is that Torah consists of the Ten Commandments, the rest of the 613 commandments, all of the oral law and oral tradition throughout the generations is all part of God's Torah. In fact, I have this fanciful little flippant way of thinking about Parshat Mishpatim, I think a similar way with Parshat Kedoshim, more than the other parshiot in the Torah, and I call them Torah popcorn. Picture a little, tiny, compact kernel of popping corn. Subject it to heat, and it bursts open into a much larger, tasty, little morsel, where that little tiny kernel was too hard to eat. I'll take a different example now of lo tignov. Two words in the Aseret HaDibrot, in the Ten Commandment, commandment number 8, which is translated into English as thou shalt not steal, which specifically is referring to the prohibition of kidnapping for the purpose of selling someone into slavery. But we can look at lo tignov as a little tiny kernel of popcorn that in Parshat Mishpatim and in Parshat Kedoshim and elsewhere not only pops into a full kernel of inside-out corn, but expands into many, many of these kernels of popcorn, all starting with the simple two words of lo tignov. You have, for example, not robbing and not stealing, burglarizing, which are different. Not holding on to something that belongs to someone else and deny that you have it, which is a form of theft, but different because the object came into your possession legitimately. But it is a popcorn version of theft, since the original two words were lo tignov. In Parshat Mishpatim, you have, if a person is caught having stolen something, he has to pay a penalty of kefel, twice the value of that which he stole. That a person who cannot make restitution on what he stole can be sold by the court as an indentured servant to a Jewish owner, who then makes a deal and pays a certain amount which will cover that which is owed by the thief. You have the episode of a thief that is caught red-handed in the act of stealing in the middle of the night in one's cellar. And under what circumstances can a person protect himself by actually killing the thief if he fears for his life? On the other hand, if it's not an issue that he should be afraid, then he can't do that, etc., etc., and a whole bunch of et ceteras are all versions of this concept of the Ten Commandments being little chapter headings, and the treatment in the whole vast mitzvah and body of literature in the Talmud are popped kernels from those little raw, tiny, inedible kernels that we start with. I've run out of time. I'm even going to have to cut some of what I've said. Of course, you won't know that unless you're very good at noticing what's missing. But I will say Shabbat Shalom, Chodesh Tov, and have a joyous month coming of Adar and Nisan, and may it continue throughout the year. And may we have cause to celebrate many, many, many months and years to come. Lehishtameah.